Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to our second episode of Where to Go, the podcast which takes you on a journey through the past, present and future of some of the world's favourite destinations.
Each bi-weekly episode sees us speak to a local expert about what they love about their city or country, best things to do, how that destination is recovering from coronavirus and, crucially, when guests may be able to travel there again.
I'm James Atkinson, online brand manager at DK Eyewitness, and this is Lucy Richards, senior editor at DK Eyewitness.
Hello, hello.
Hello, and today we are discussing Sweden and Stockholm.
Yes, Sweden is just this endless source of stirring sights and exhilarating experiences, from mesmerising coastal drives and kaleidoscopic skies to crystal clear lakes and the deserted snowy wilderness of the north. Nature really is your companion in Sweden. And couple this with some of Europe's coolest cities, including Stockholm and Gothenburg, where you'll discover artsy communities, effortlessly cool design and some of the world's finest food. And you really do have all the ingredients for a perfect destination.
It's also this, one of the spiritual homes of slow travel. In fact, it's almost the law to travel slowly, with the law of Almenzraten. I hope I've said that right.
Yeah, that's right.
meaning that all residents have the freedom to roam in nature, so they can camp, walk, cycle, ride and ski anywhere except for private gardens or land under cultivation. Residents can also forage for food, swim in lakes, and pretty much do anything in the great outdoors, so long as they respect nature and don't litter.
And shortly we're going to be joined by Lola Akinmadi-Åkerström, award-winning travel writer and photographer. Today, we're joined by slow travel expert Lola Akinmadi-Åkerström, award-winning travel writer and photographer, the acclaimed author of two books, Due North and Lagom, The Swedish Secret of Living Well, and the editor of Slow Travel Stockholm. I am really excited to welcome you, Lola. I am a huge, huge fan, and not to mention a fellow lover of all things Nordic. So welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Lola. So a quick brief explanation of like the format and what we're going to do today. So we're going to look at the past, present and future of Sweden with Lola, understanding what makes it such a unique destination and how it has been impacted by coronavirus, and how, hopefully, fingers crossed, we may be able to visit again in the future. So we're going to start by looking at Sweden from a pre-coronavirus or COVID perspective. So Lola, firstly, both me and Lucy watched your TED talk. It was brilliant.
So wonderful.
Thank you.
Really inspiring. If anyone's not watched it,
it's... Yes, you're such an amazing speaker, Lola.
Oh,
you really
are. Thank
you
so much. Thanks.
And for those who haven't watched it, the TED talk's all about the kind of the power of asking why not. And it's almost a kind of a personal journey through kind of how you became a travel writer, how you gave up being what sounds like quite a good life, being living as a consultant, to follow your dreams of becoming a travel writer and photographer. So for those who don't know, kind of how did you make that leap and get started? And what kind of inspired you to want to work in travel and become a writer and photographer?
Absolutely. So many years ago, I used to live in the US and used to work as a programmer. Mm-hmm. But I've always loved traveling. So when I traveled, I kept journals and took photos to come paint mm-hmm. from those photos. But it was in 2002, I volunteered with an expedition race on one of my vacations. And my job was to be a volunteer kind of web writer, mm-hmm. About the expedition. And so it was in Fiji. I was writing about these amazing places we were visiting in Fiji that were very remote, as well as interviewing, the athletes. And so that was when it all clicked for me.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness, this is exciting. This is something I want to explore. This is a form of storytelling that really just turns me on. And so when I moved, got back, I started plotting my escape, from programming to explore this a lot more.
How long did that kind of plan take?
I would say it took 5 years in terms of actually getting my first piece published, and then I kept working as a programmer until I was able to gain enough traction, because it was a side gig for a while, and then jump fully, just pretty much swan dive,
into trying. So you kind of played the long game in a way.
Exactly, but just also doing it in a smart way and sustainable way. And so, once I jumped into travel writing and photography and then moved to Sweden over 10 years ago, that's kind of when I started creating some more regional expertise.
And so then when you moved to Sweden, did you immediately move to Stockholm or were you living somewhere more rural beforehand?
No, I moved straight to Stockholm.
You've been there since. So kind of what makes Stockholm so special?
So what I love about Stockholm is just, it's got this big city feel, but in a kind of very charming way.
Yeah,
I can see that.
And a small town feel. So it's weird because it's a cosmopolitan city, but it also feels like a small town. It's got a lot of nature. It's the city itself is just physically stunning. Yeah. It's built on 14 different islands.
Oh, wow, okay.
So when you look at Stockholm from an elevated position or from maybe a hot air balloon, which also flies in the city.
Wow, okay.
It's just beautiful to see visually from the top.
Yeah, I went to Stockholm a few years ago and I remember flying into, is it Ostfinsen Airport? terrible pronunciation. I remember sort of flying in and you just see all of those islands and it looks like you're not coming into a city at all. It's it's amazing.
No, it's really beautiful. And so it's just a very super photogenic city. Sorry, Copenhagen, but Stockholm
is. Yeah, so you prefer, you obviously do prefer Stockholm to Copenhagen then.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just physically stunning. It's a physically stunning city. And then, of course, with it's got about 30,000 islands in its, islands and skerries and islets in its archipelago. So it's just a geographically kind of beautiful place.
Yeah. So James has been to Sweden and Stockholm, but I never have. So Lola, pretending that, which I don't know very much about Sweden at all, can you briefly introduce Sweden as a whole? Like, what can visitors expect? Sell it to me.
So Sweden is, it's actually the fourth or fifth largest country landmass in Europe, which means it just covers a large area from the north to the east, to the west, to the south. And all of those regions are very unique. Okay. So when people say I'm coming to Sweden for a week, I'm like, it's usually not enough because, for example, when West Sweden, which is where Gothenburg or Göteborg is, that region has its own geography and that's one of the best places for seafood in the whole country. So everybody knows that, and then just the south where it's more lowlands and kind of closer to the Danish border and Malmö there. And then Stockholm is just so much fun. If you love culture, if you love food, if you love just a laid back kind of feel, to your vacation, that is what Stockholm will give you. And one of the things I always recommend is once you get to Stockholm, try and get onto the water as quickly as possible.
Yes, yeah.
Because because it's one of the best ways to kind of flow through, between the islands and see just how beautiful the architecture is, you know. And of course, northern Sweden, you know, you've got national parks, you've got, you know, just really rich indigenous Sami culture.
Yes.
And so there's so much to explore in Sweden.
Yes. Sold. Yes. Yeah. So something for everyone by the sounds of things. It sounds like there is sort of something for every taste.
So you mentioned a little bit about sort of national parks and also a bit earlier about your description of Stockholm, about getting onto the water. And I know you write a lot about slow travel as well. And it sort of seems like it's sort of built into the Swedish lifestyle. What can other countries really learn about traveling from the Swedes? Mm.
Yes. So just talking in general about slow travel, I always say it has nothing to do with duration, because when people say slow travel, they think I have to be in a place for months on end to really kind of get, you know, on that the place. But slow travel to me means pace at which you explore a place. So even if I'm in Stockholm for 3 days, I can actually slow travel Stockholm based on the pace and the theme I choose to explore the city. And so that's kind of what I'm an advocate for, is just not doing too much. Just picking one or a few things and then going in depth through those things.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the, also the mindset of kind of the Swedish culture as well, which is lagom, which is very not too much, not too little, just right. Mm. So creating kind of the right experience, just right experiences as well, without overdoing it or feeling the need to check off every single thing on your checklist.
Yes. And then, as you say, I suppose if you do it that way, you get so much more out of it, don't you? If you're not kind of rushing to take everything off your list, it means you can properly enjoy it and make the most of it.
I remember like kind of going around Stockholm, and it's kind of like, it's not one of those cities where there's like necessarily a tick list. I mean, you can approach it like that. You could go to, the Vasa Museum and the Abbey Museum and all of the kind of usual places that you'd be expected to go to. But actually you can wander around the Djurgården for hours on end, basically. You can plan a whole half day just to spend wandering around the city as well. And as you say, like, it's kind of on the water and beautiful. There's different ways to appreciate it, I think.
The Scandinavians have just got it right, haven't they? With sort of, you know, how you guys live. I'm thinking also of, you know, a few years ago we had the whole Denmark and Hygge. There was that whole sort of Hygge phenomenon.
Yeah.
Just we should all be moving to Scandinavia.
every place has its best parts, and, you know, it's not always perfect. But yes, there's lots of things to enjoy.
So then, do you have any sort of favorite travel stories from your time in sort of traveling around Sweden, Lola?
Yes. So one of the things, and I don't know if you guys knew this, but I used to be Sweden's official photo blogger for two years, which meant they had, so Sweden's official website, sweden.se, had blogs. And my job was to kind of travel around and take some pictures about the country, you know, around Sweden, what I was experiencing through my own lens. So I really got to explore Sweden just from top to bottom. And some of the amazing experiences have been a lot from northern Sweden as well, like chasing the northern lights.
Gosh, you know, I mean, they're amazing.
And seeing them many times, you know, or spending time, you know, with like the indigenous Sami community when they invite you in and show you and introduce you to the culture. And then in West Sweden, you know, going out with the fishermen, what they call seafood journeys or seafood safaris, where you go out. And you go get, we call it their version of the Big Five.
Okay.
Which is, which is like oysters, mussels, crayfish, shrimps, and lobsters, you know. And so going and farming for those as well. So, I mean, there's so much to explore around the country. And I love getting beneath the culture, just through food and tradition and lifestyle. So that's kind of what always drives me.
So you talked a little bit about kind of storytelling and that being a reason why you got into travel writing as well. And that's an amazing, lots of stories to tell there.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And also because I didn't grow up in Sweden, there are also things that I may notice or be more observant about that maybe people that grew up here might take for granted. So that's also the bonus. And that's also kind of why I wrote the book Lagom. It was from a really kind of outside in perspective, but also being living in the country, being a naturalized Swede and speaking Swedish. So I was able to bring kind of those two points of view. So storytelling for me is, you know, that's how I navigate my backyard.
Yeah. So now we're discussing the present, and Sweden has been much discussed around the world in recent months as the only EU country not to have a full lockdown. Whereas this was originally seen to be a popular decision in the country, Sweden has subsequently been hardest hit by COVID amongst all the Nordic countries.
And when countries such as the UK announced their quarantine exemptions when opening the metaphorical door for travel, Sweden was not immediately added to many lists. For context, we're recording this in late July, and Sweden has opened its own borders to many EU countries. We're going to take a look at how the last few months have been and what Sweden is like today. So, Lola, Sweden has been under quite a lot of international scrutiny as one of the countries that is one of the only countries really to adopt the sort of herd mentality approach. What do you remember about the kind of early days of the virus, and how did the residents of Stockholm kind of feel about it? How did you kind of talk about it in your own friendship groups? And
exactly. So very early on, there was already a split, mm-hmm. right? And so the split was between those that were born in Sweden that trusted the government mm-hmm. fully, regardless of whatever policies are in mm-hmm. place, because it's the government is always looking out for the people, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And then the other group were the expatriates and the immigrants who come from different places and say, well, you can't put all your faith in the government. This is new for us. Mm. This is strange. And so there was a lot of tension where when people were expressing concerns, lots of locals were trying to, we call it Swedesplaining, explaining, look, this is how it works here. You don't have to worry. It's worked for decades. We're good. Until the numbers started rising, yeah. you know, in terms of like the infection and death rates. And then people were still trying to explain it away, but still were becoming a lot more uncomfortable,
yeah.
even, you know, Swedes. And so the irony is, because it's a country that loves rules and regulations, if the government had just switched tactics, yeah. people would have followed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it wasn't, you know, and so that was what's, it's also making it frustrating is if the government had said everybody just wear face masks, everybody will do it,
yeah.
you know, because it's not a society that just questions the, you know, it's one that trusts the
yes.
government.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so the early on with COVID, it was really, there was a lot of tension. I mean, people kept their kids out of school, and it was mostly foreigners that kept their kids out
okay.
of school. The others were fine, you know. But then after a while, in Sweden, kids' rights supersede the parents' decision. So your kids have to go back to school because it is their rights to be in
okay.
school. So there were so many kind of social, you know, tension. But now it feels like people just know that COVID is there and are doing whatever they feel like they want to do. And some people are following government guidelines, some people aren't. So
how have you found it, Lola? How have you found, because I think you said you have some kids, you know, were they at home? You've obviously been working from home. Like how have you, yes. have you been okay?
Yes. So gratefully we've been fine, you know, we've avoided the disease, but for the first 6 weeks we kept them at home because I just wasn't comfortable putting them in school,
yeah.
you know, but then after 6 weeks, I had no other reason, even though it was just mother's instinct.
Yeah.
It got to the point where some schools were actually reporting parents to like social services because they were keeping, you know, the kids home. So they went back to school. And even though it's a lot looser here, you know, I mean, we still practice social distancing.
Yeah.
You know, we are still very cognizant. And I think we're all trying to do our best as good citizens,
yes.
you know, to make sure that even though the rules are a bit looser, that doesn't mean we should just run rampant and infect everybody.
Yeah.
So does it feel a bit more, I mean, obviously you got in Sweden, it's been going on for since March or so, like the rest of Europe. And does it feel like it's kind of getting back to normality now, or is it still very much in everyone's heads?
I think it's getting back to normal, which is what's because people are, the thing that's difficult is because people can't travel as much, you know, outside of Sweden, because many countries have actually put Sweden on the red list. So that has affected a lot of people's vacation plans. So so what they're doing is just traveling around Sweden a lot more and then congregating on beaches and, you know, So it's kind of like life is slowly going to normal because people feel like they're outside of the risk zone, so they can live their lives. But I think what's frustrating is that they can't leave because they've been banned, you know, by other countries for a while, you know.
I know that James and I both loved in your TEDx talk the line where you said, as a travel writer, I'm moved by curiosity, both abroad and in my backyard. And that seems especially potent in lockdown. So have you sort of seen, what have you been doing in Stockholm? Have you seen some new sides of it? Have you kind of been travelling around the city? You know, what have you kind of discovered in your backyard?
Correct. So I have been limiting my travelling around Stockholm, actually. And Stockholm has been a lot more quiet, you know. I mean, especially during the summer, people just kind of, they go to the archipelago or out into the countryside. And so Stockholm has been very, I would say, relatively quiet, right? A lot of businesses have struggled, you know, I mean, and the government has been great in terms of trying to subsidize and keep, you know, like a lot of the restaurants, you know, afloat. So the hospitality industry in Stockholm was really hit hard. But what I see as I move around is just, again, because Swedes are so connected to nature, they find solace in nature. So everybody's just out in the parks, you know. We have to remind them to stay apart, but just out in the parks, you know. They're going out hiking, they're, you know, out on the water. They're just going back to the outdoors, which is where Swedes really feel comfortable. So that's kind of what I've been, you know, noticing and seeing.
It's interesting kind of putting that, if I think about like putting that frame on London, for instance, like lots of, you know, obviously pubs, restaurants, bars and so on have been shut in London, and actually it's kind of led lots of people to re-engage with green spaces and stuff. But I guess for Swedes that's almost a natural thing. It's
exactly no, absolutely. And even when things started in terms of social distancing, because it's a culture where that naturally gives space anyway, you know, people are already in the beginning saying, well, Swedes will be fine because they're just naturally socially distanced. It's in their kind of in their, you know, in their psyche, in their mindset. So so that was some of the things early on. But now it's got, you know, then it got a lot more serious. But so there are some things in the culture that does facilitate a bit of isolation and individualism and not kind of clumping together, you know. But
I'm assuming not after what you just said, but are travellers right now starting to come back, or for now is Stockholm very much just sort of as it was, or are you seeing people coming from sort of abroad or around Sweden generally?
So tourists have started slowly, very slowly trickling in. I think, was it last week where one of the big cruise ships, because we have ferries between Stockholm and the Baltic, kind of Baltic states, you know. So, like, to Tallinn and to Riga. And so one of the ferries went last week and there was, like, this whole big fanfare, like, oh, look, the first kind of ship of, you know, of ferries, of people moving. So I think people are slowly beginning to move around while still staying very cautious. And but I think it's also the other way around, because it's the summer and people leave Stockholm anyway. You know, so the city is usually quiet in July.
Interesting. So what kind of places have people been kind of leaving to go to? You mentioned about heading to the beaches and so on, but is it just all over Sweden? Does everyone kind of...
So mostly, again, running towards the coastlines as well as two islands. Gotland is kind of one of the biggest offshore islands on Sweden's east coast, kind of southeast, and then Öland. So those two islands is where kind of Swedes run to, but now a lot more people are going there because they can kind of leave Stockholm, you know, the country for for the international vacation. So they're all flocking there, or they're all going out west, because West Sweden is just a great place for vacation. A lot of fishing villages and islands, and island hopping on this rocky island. So that's where people have kind of, I've noticed people are kind of running up to.
So it's not too bad to not be able to leave the country when you've got such an amazing...
And I've always said this, that it's very difficult to get a Swede out of Sweden during the summer. Even pre-corona, because it's just a beautiful place to be. There's a lot of sunlight, you know, the sun really doesn't go down until like 10, you know, 9, 10. Gets up early and... and the weather is very temperate, low hanging clouds. It's just a pleasant place to be yes. during the summer. So they might run out of Stockholm, but they're actually yeah. still in Sweden.
Yeah,
somewhere.
I have to say that that's too, I'm very envious of you having seen the Northern Lights a few times, but I would love to see that midnight sun. Is it May till July when the sun just sort of doesn't set? Am I getting that right?
Yes. So it's kind of May through the end of okay. July, and it's and up north it just doesn't set. It just kind of hovers,
yeah.
you know,
yeah, sort of hangs
on the horizon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just hangs right there. But the great thing is it's beautiful. You get some really beautiful lights.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
just especially yeah, you just get some really beautiful lights. But the crazy thing is then your eyes are just open. You barely get anything.
Of course.
You know, so.
Yeah,
so.
How amazing. I bet as a photographer, Lola, that's, you know, those kinds of natural wonders you must just be drawn
oh,
to
yes.
like a moth
oh,
to a flame. Amazing.
Absolutely. But especially in the winter where the sun actually never really truly rises.
Okay.
That's where you get some really, because especially up north, the sun is kind of just up on the horizon.
Yeah.
There's a lot of snow and then it
oh.
just casts this kind
oh.
of
magical
glow on the snow. And yeah, so during the winter, you get some spectacular just light playing across the landscape.
That's a top tip from Lola for listeners.
Sounds amazing. And have you been able to get your camera out and take many pictures in the last couple of months, or has it been a bit frustrating in a way?
It has been a bit frustrating. Mm. I've kept it. I mean, I did pull it out because I saw it's something around, it's called a sun halo, where there's, I don't know if you've seen those before, but I took a picture of that. I saw that, so I just brought out my camera, made sure I took that shot. But for the most part, I've kept it. You know, I think next month I'm going to bring it out because I'm going to be on vacation
yeah.
and I'm going to just be exploring and then kind of, I just blow them up, you know, blow the dust off,
yes.
you know, before
yes.
I go on my assignment in September. No, but for the most part, and I think a lot of travel photographers also were in this kind of slump as well, is the first few months of Corona were just, I can't think. There was no creativity. You just didn't want to touch anything. You were just like, what is this? When are we going to get out of, you know, this pandemic?
Yeah, I think for a lot of people in the industry, it felt like it was never
yes.
ending to start with. And I guess at least there's a bit of a ray of light now almost. And
yeah.
No
exactly.
But,
yes.
But that nicely leads us on to our next section. So we're going to look at a little bit about kind of what next for Sweden and also what next for you, Lola.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So what's next? What's next for me? I mean, I'm really excited. My kind of next photography assignment is going to be in September. I'm really looking forward to that, even though it's probably to just a neighboring country.
Mm.
But I've also launched my academy. You know, I've been teaching people,
oh, wow.
you
yes.
know, how to become better storytellers. I'm launching tomorrow my course on how to sell your photos. You know, so I'm really excited
yeah.
about that. And as well as I, you know, keep doing the things I love, and not just doing them, but also teaching others the way I do it as well,
yeah.
and what has worked for me over the years. So,
yeah.
lots of little things going on, you know, in the background. But
that's what
really
I think I really admire about you, Lola. Is I love the fact that you know you want to tell your stories and show your stories to the world, but it's also the fact that you're there to kind of encourage other people to do that too. And I just think that is, I've sort of long admired you, and I think that's just incredibly cool.
Thank you so really, much. Really, really cool. Thank you. Thank you. And, you know, the tagline for my academy is putting the heart back into the craft.
Yes.
Because, you know, as we've worked in this industry, sometimes we've all kind of lost our way and the reason why we got into it in the first place. And it's just about just creating something that's just so consumerist, you know, and consumer focused that there is no, that we lose the feeling of what makes travel exciting.
Yes.
Why, you know, and so this is trying to help us get back to that.
And it sort of feels like post coronavirus, when we haven't been able to travel, as you're sort of saying, this is the time that we really need to add that heart back into it as well. It seems like actually it's kind of it's the right timing for this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's that kind of emotional connection, really, that I think it's become reinforced when you can't do something. It's you know, we're, Lucy works as an editor working on our travel guides. I work across all of our online stuff, and generally, you know, you write about travel every day, you're thinking about travel every day, but actually when you can't travel, that's when there's a real gap missing, and you kind of realize how emotionally connected you are to it.
Exactly.
So is your academy kind of, has it got like a global focus? Can people join it online? Or?
Yes, absolutely. It's already on, you know, it's already launched, it's online. It's, you know, everywhere in the world, you know, people can sign up for it, you know, and it's very intuitive, very easy to use, very visual. You know, because
of
I
course.
Am a visual storyteller.
Yes.
So it's available. Absolutely.
Fantastic. That sounds great. So in terms of like your own plans, do you have you mentioned about a kind of an upcoming assignment. Where is that? Where are you going to?
So it's probably going to be in Finland, you know, right now. You never know if they change, you know.
Focus.
Yeah.
You know, because it's for a travel magazine. Mm-hmm. One, you know, and then just other things, you know, is, you know, I'm going to be this fall, because I'm also an entrepreneur and I run my own business.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be part of a cohort of entrepreneurs and founders with, that's going to be mentored by a venture capitalist, company. So lots of those kind of business side of things as well. And, some really exciting news is I've got another book coming out.
Okay.
Great.
It's not travel per se, because it's fiction, but it's based in Sweden.
It's fiction.
Wonderful.
So, oh, wow.
So I'm really excited about that.
Is this your first fiction book then?
Yeah, it's fiction. It's all fiction, but based in, you know, it spans the US and the UK, but mostly in Sweden.
Oh, wonderful.
And so I'm really excited about it.
Is it a classic Swedish crime noir, or is it kind of...
No, haven't gone
for that cliche?
Not at all. No, it's an upmarket fiction, so it's more like a mix of literary fiction and contemporary.
Wonderful.
So very character-driven, with very relatable plots.
Okay.
You know? And so, yeah, so I'm excited.
When does it come out? Have you got a date yet? Or?
Yeah, so it's going to come out next year.
Okay.
But you'll know soon once the announcement.
Okay.
You know, we're just kind
watch
of like
space.
You know, making,
yeah, absolutely,
exactly. You know, letting the ink dry.
Yeah.
You know, they say, you know. So then, but yes, absolutely. But mark your calendars next year.
Oh, that's really exciting.
Yeah, can't wait to read it. And kind of in terms of Sweden, like, are the government doing anything to try and get travellers coming back to Sweden? I know. Obviously, there's many countries which can't visit Sweden right now, but I think there is a bit of a tidal shift, and, you know, more countries are kind of coming back online as governments go. Are the Swedish government doing anything related to that, or?
Well, I don't know. I think it depends. It's their priority is more just containment and trying to make sure it's not spreading as much. Mm. So, yes, you know, visit Sweden and all the tourist boards want people to start coming back in, and I know. I just worked on a branded collaboration that's about spending time in Sweden.
Mm. Okay.
So I think they are looking for the right time to get all that kind of messaging out, you know, that says, you know, come relax and rejuvenate, you know, and things like that. But focusing on the things that make Sweden great, which again is that it's the closeness to nature and outdoors and eating close to nature and natural and sustainability. So that's where the promotion is going to be around.
Okay,
you know,
yes.
Once we start kind of opening and getting people back in.
So do you think that sort of 2021 is the year for kind of slow travel, which obviously you're a huge advocate for?
Yes. Well, it's gonna be a big year for slow travel, but also backyard travel.
Yes.
So there's gonna be lots of road trips. Yeah. One of the things I do is I work with different destinations as well, where we do like kind of marketing, social media collaborations. Mm. And one of the Baltic countries we're actually in a negotiation right now, but it's about a road trip. You know, it's about trying to see how we can get people to reconnect again with the country.
Yeah.
And then through road trips, which is slow travel, and then exploring in a way that's sustainable, that creates distance, you know, socially, so you're not packed on buses or public transport, and you know, spending time in nature. So that's kind of where people are going to start focusing and targeting, you know, their tourism. It's going to be either health tourism, you know, spa, wellness, relaxation, outdoors, slow. All those kind, those are the things that are going to really, in 2021, I anticipate are going to be
and
top.
How about people coming to kind of to Stockholm? Will they be experiencing Stockholm differently to how they would have before kind of coronavirus and the lockdown? Or will it sort of, do you think, you know, if James and I were to come, would it be largely as it was before, really?
It may be largely as it was. Yeah. I mean, I think there might be some things in terms of like hygiene or, you know, trying, you know, when you visit places, masks are not being worn.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're not going to see, so that's not going to be a something that you physically see.
Yeah.
You know, there are people that when they wear it, they do it because they are the ones that just want to protect, you know, others and themselves. And, but on, in that regard, you're not going to see a change.
No.
It's
just
going to be the occasional few people wearing masks. But what you might see a change is more maybe spacing, you know, like on public transport. Right now, when I go on a tram, like a small tram, the conductors don't come around anymore to kind of check their tickets because that's also for the safety.
Okay.
You know, or now with the buses, there's now shields and, you know, a chain around the driver.
Okay.
So you actually just go on the bus now for free. You just go on the back.
Okay.
So you don't have to go in the front and then scan your ticket and interact and spit on his face.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So things, those kind of things are changing in the right now. I don't know how long term it's going to be because they still have to make money on transport somehow.
Yeah,
and, you know, people are traveling for free for now. So those are some of the things that you might see.
Yeah.
If you come to Stockholm now, just a little bit of those changes.
Are the boats still running as as normal in Stockholm? Because that's such a essential part of the transport infrastructure there.
Yeah, you mean with the boats?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. The boats are still going, ferries are still going, you know. So that's, there isn't any change there. Mm-hmm. I think it's just more, you might see a lot less people on some of the public transport, you know, just people trying to space out a little bit more.
But generally, it doesn't sound like it's too dramatic a change.
No, it's not too dramatic. I mean, it's not too dramatic. It's just if you come now, the city is not as packed because it's July. People are not in town in July, you know. But you won't see a major change. You'll notice a few things, but it's not going to be drastic.
Yeah. Mm.
And you said a bit about the sort of hospitality industry really suffering quite a lot. Has there been closures over there, or do you think has the government succeeded in kind of like helping people through it? And
yes, I mean, I think they are really trying to keep that industry afloat, and I know some of the hotels are now beginning to get booked fully because of people coming into Stockholm from outside of Sweden, you know, because people are now traveling a lot more around Sweden.
Mm. Yeah.
And so now a lot of them are now targeting their marketing towards locals. Okay. Our target, target language, you know, was for international people. But now what is a local going to look for when they come to our place? Because they already know everything else.
Yes.
Yeah.
So how can we make our property or our restaurant or something, you know, targeted to locals and attract them as well?
Yes.
So there's a lot of that going on as well.
Yeah. How interesting. As a side note, sort of slightly unrelated to this podcast, we can edit this out. We're working on a series about locals here in-house with various cities. And it's exactly that, where we're trying to think about London, you know, what can locals do in London, like rediscovering their city, etc. So this is, I guess, going to be a huge thing, isn't it? It's kind of getting, exactly as you said, the whole backyard, discovering your backyard and getting people to sort of explore their cities in their, you know, afresh, I suppose.
Exactly.
I think there's a lot less like kind of big ticket travel. I think that's a big trend for next year. And as you said, that kind of leads into slow travel and exploration, but it also leads into kind of people really looking for hidden gems and odd bits and pieces and things they've never seen before. And seeing that, seeing your city in continually different lights is actually something that's quite exhilarating.
It's exciting, isn't it? I mean, I'm in East London, and the idea of like going to South London, I'm like, oh God, I hear South London's lovely this time of year. Get me there, pronto.
Exactly.
You can come anytime, Lucy. Well, welcome to come here.
Thanks, James. Thank you.
I think like obviously 2020 has been a really strange year in so many different ways. Mm. And in your TEDx talk, you kind of look at how we sort of change narratives in rooms where others are like locked out of, and you know, how we can break down some of those doors. Mm. And do you think kind of some of the more positive elements of 2020 have started to open doors slightly? I mean, you talk about kind of advocacy with your academy. And do you think there's actually quite a potentially sort of positive future in terms of those doors starting to open, people starting to...
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, you know, just with the Black Lives Matter movement and 2020, and that has really opened, you know, it's still going to be a long journey. Mm. It's a long struggle, but that has opened a lot of doors because people are at home and have time to focus on, you know, the energy to actually, you know, address this properly. And so I think that's kind of like the blessing in disguise. Yes. Is that some of those doors are now opening up, you know, within the travel industry as well. You know, people are now getting the assignments they deserve, you know. Yeah. And so that is one of the blessings I see, is that it's now really causing the industry to self-reflect and say, why did we have these doors closed?
Yeah.
You know, for so long. Mm. So.
Yeah. And as you said, sort of maybe... with the lockdown, giving people a bit more, you know, to just stop and listen and learn. It was, as you sort of said, a bit of a blessing in disguise and something hopefully to come out of coronavirus.
I think so many times in the past, like, you know, Black Lives Matter has been going on for so long and, you know, but it continually comes up and then goes away as an issue. And actually, it's really positive to see that it's stayed on the agenda in the past couple of months, that people are engaging, people are committing to institutional change as well.
Mm. Exactly. So it's a matter of just, you know, staying the course because, you know, nothing got changed overnight, you know, but I am very positive, at least some of the changes have been made. And so it's now, once we start traveling again, we don't forget, you know, and be like, oh, we're good.
Yeah.
You know,
I think this is a year that's changed everything in so many ways, hopefully, you know, hopefully things for the better in the future.
Then Lola, you touched on the art industry as well. Do you have any advice for you want to give to people who want to get into travel writing or photography? Obviously, you have your academy. Do you have any kind of real pearls of wisdom for any budding writers or photographers?
Absolutely. You know what? I think it first of all starts with passion. I know it's cliche, but if you're not passionate about what you're doing. Yeah. Because the road is going to be bumpy. There's going to be ebbs and flows.
Sure.
You're not going to be able to sustain yourself if you're not passionate about what you're doing. Another thing is try and create a niche early and niche fast, because it's too late to be everything to everyone. Yeah. So what you want to do is, based on what you are naturally passionate about, try to create expertise in that area, because your voice, you write with authority when you are truly interested in what you're writing about.
Yep.
So that comes across in your work. Like, I'm not a surfer. I've never gone surfing. So if I write about it, they're going to see through me quickly.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one of those things. And then with photography, one of the things I always say is find your visual voice and find it early. Mm. And what that means is, if I take about 10 of your photos and put them together side by side, can I tell it's from the same photographer?
Yeah.
Can I see that there is a style, there's a technique?
Yeah.
Because one of the things I see is there are so many epic landscape shots, right? Landscape shots, but I don't know if it's James or Lucy or Dave or Scott that took that epic shot, because it all looks the same.
Mm.
But if I see a shot that may not be technically perfect, that may not be my taste, but I'm like, that's Lucy's shot.
Yeah.
That's where you want to be as a photographer.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's where, you know, you want to start kind of growing your visual voice. And that's what's going to really help you stand out, is because you have a style.
So is that kind of like experimenting with your style, trying to push it in different ways, trying to, you know, add stories into your style and things like that as well?
Exactly, you know, and just do, and even, it could be just even down to the way you edit your photos, you know. I mean, the way I edit my photos, they are really vibrant and very like eye contrast and lots of dark blacks.
Yeah.
And that's because I used to be an oil painter. That's what my eye sees when I edit. You know, and so that's kind of, that comes through when I edit just my work.
Yeah.
And if you see a Scandinavian photographer from, you know, they've got more like muted colors and low-key.
Yeah.
You can tell. Yeah. So you can start telling what, you know, what influences a photographer. Based on their background too.
And I guess for that, you kind of, you start to get, when people commission you, you start, they have an understanding of your work. They know what you're about. And it's probably easier to work with them and understand their briefs because they know what kind of style you you approach.
Yes, absolutely.
Amazing. That's a great tip.
Sage advice.
I wish I could actually take photos. I'm terrible.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, those courses are coming.
Yeah,
exactly. We'll sign up.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Lola. I think it's been wonderful having you on the show. And it's a new show as well, so thanks for bearing with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's fascinating to hear about Sweden and Stockholm. I really want to go back.
Come back, why not?
Yeah, it's, I have to say, Lola, talking to you has been one of the highlights of my lockdown, so thank you so much. It's so lovely to have met you at last. I'm really hoping at some point we can meet in person. I'd love that.
Absolutely. And thank you so much. Thanks for thinking about me for this as well.
No,
thank
not
you.
At all.
So great to meet you.
Absolutely. To get closer to Sweden yourself, our DKI Witness Sweden Guide is now available. Whether you want to glimpse spectacular northern lights, sample new Nordic cuisine in Stockholm's trendy restaurants, or kayak across crystal clear lakes, your DKI Witness Travel Guide makes sure you experience all that Sweden has to offer. Find it in all good retailers or on Amazon via the link in our episode description.
In the next episode, available in 2 weeks' time, we'll be visiting New York City with New York experts Kweku Olsen and Laura Paley.
Can't wait for that. It's going to be really, really fun.
I'm really excited.
It's going to be good. Special thanks again to Lola for being such an amazing guest. Lola. And we look forward to you joining us again for our next episode.
Yes, definitely. I'd love that.
See you then. Where to Go was produced by the team at DKI Witness and presented by Lucy Richards and James Atkinson. For more information about DKI Witness, follow us on social media at DKI Witness or visit dk.com/eyewitness.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.